Hello, baseball fans. It's Thursday, February 19th, 2009, and this is The Walk-Off. I'm Dan.
I'm Noah.
And we're just a couple college dudes, been living together for about 5 years now. Sit around, talk baseball, drink beers, and, you know.
Dan asked me if we could bring a microphone to the relationship, and, you know, I was a little liquored up at the time, and I figure that doesn't sound that bad.
It's the beer.
I figure we both won a couple of fantasy leagues in our time, and so, you know, we figure we'd share some tips with some people. So I've been playing fantasy baseball for about 10 years. I've gotten lucky a few times, won some money. You know, Dan himself has also won a bunch of money. We like to sit around and talk about how we won that money and
get some tips out there for you folks. You know, we're just a couple ordinary dudes who like the game. Figured, hey, let's get it out to the masses.
Maybe spread some love, you know.
Let's see if some magic can happen.
All right, well, you know, with that being said, you know, we should probably talk about why we win. I think for me personally, I like to utilize drafting with a huge upside. I feel like if you draft young and you get, you know, you get the biggest bang for your buck. In those keeper leagues, the guys typically are cheaper, so you're able to get one or two real consistent guys and then build on them. I also really believe in position scarcity. I feel like if you draft people based on the scarcity of the position rather than the abundance of it, you're able to really make some adjustments and do some good things. So I feel like drafting a second baseman, a shortstop, a third baseman, a catcher early rather than late gives you the best opportunity to win. Dan, he kind of does it the other way.
Yeah, I definitely do it the other way. I definitely agree with position scarcity, you know. But on the flip side of what Noah was saying with his young guys, I like those established players, those guys who were tried, true, tested, and just, you know, I know they can get it done.
Oh, you know what that means.
I guess that means we're leading off today, and the leadoff segment is something we do where we just talk about some baseball news.
Ken Griffey Jr. has signed with the Seattle Mariners. He signed a one-year deal worth $2 million of guaranteed money and up to $4 million in incentives. They've got him slated to play left field as well as DH. Dan, what do you think about this deal?
You know, I think this is a great deal. He built the fan base when he was on his first tour with the Mariners, and I think it's great for Griffey's legacy. You know, like he's going to go out as a Mariner where he established himself and really made a name for himself. So, you know, I really think that this is a good move.
Yeah, I agree. I really would like to see Ken Griffey Jr. bounce back and have a healthy season. I think him being a DH or being able to be a DH is going to be really helpful. I think it's going to keep him healthy. And, I wouldn't be surprised to see Ken Griffey Jr. hit 20, 25 home runs this year. And like you said, I hope he does go out this way because, you know, after 11 years with Seattle, I think the fans deserve it there.
Definitely.
Speaking of another guy who's been with the team for a little while, Brian Roberts got a four-year, $40 million extension today from the Baltimore Orioles. So the guy that they were trying to move so desperately last year is now a fixture and a mainstay. What do you think?
For a guy who, you know, they tried to move, I guess, you know, if you can't beat him, join him, man.
See, you know? I feel like this is Baltimore saying, you know, we're for real, guys. I really feel like by them signing somebody like a Brian Roberts and paying him, I really feel like they're telling the young players that they're ready to compete and they plan on winning in the next 4 years. And I think this is a great sign for them. So, note to everyone, February 25th, we've got our first spring training game.
Good stuff.
Super excited. I can't wait. But you know what that means? That means drafts are popping up. And with drafts popping up, we got to start talking about draft picks because, you know.
Well, that's why we're here.
Fantasy baseball.
That's right.
So let me go ahead and break this down on how Dan and I like to do this. You know, a lot of sites give you that top 100, and, you know, we feel like that kind of muddles. We feel like, you know, in that top 100, you might get 10 first basemen, and that doesn't really help you draft a solid team.
No, not at all. I can't do anything with 10 first basemen.
No, and I feel like when I go into a fantasy draft, I break it down position by position. I figure out who I'd like to have and who I think fits best on my team. I try to get a balanced team and a young team and a versatile team. So, Dan, why don't you go ahead and let them or tell them how we do this?
Well, what we're doing here is we're going, as Noah stated, we're going to go by position, starting with the infield, moving our way into the outfield, and then going to pitchers. We've each got one of those obvious choices, like the choices. We've got a mid-round guy in case you can't get those big names. And we've each got a couple sleepers, you know, for those people looking to take some risks.
All right, well, who's your guy? Who's your number one catcher?
Well, if we're talking catchers, I got to go with Joe Mauer and the Minnesota Twins. He's a relatively young kid, but he's been in the league for a while. He's 25-26, put up 98 runs and 85 RBIs last year, and he's a career 317 hitter. He did have some off-season kidney surgery, but according to the Twins general manager, it was nothing serious. So I'm looking for, you know, about the same from him, maybe some 94 runs, 95 RBIs.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that pick. I personally feel like I'd like to go with somebody who has a little bit more pop at the catcher position if I can get him. I'm definitely not going to pass on a Mauer, but if I've got a first choice, I love Brian McCain. I feel like he's got a lot of pop. He's got a good lineup around him, and he's just destined to be good. Last year with his 23 home runs and 87 RBIs, hitting over 300, I think he's going to build on that. He's going to play 145 games plus, you know. Guy I really like. Who's your sleeper? Or who's your mid-round guy, Dan?
My mid-round guy, I'm looking at a Benjamin Molina on the San Francisco Giants. He's getting a little bit up on the old side. He's 34. But, you know, if you look at last year's numbers, he really stepped up and became the guy that, you know, produced some runs out there. You know, he became a guy the Giants could really rely on. He had a career year, had more at-bats and played more games than he ever has in his entire career, and also put up 95 RBIs and 16 home runs. With him hitting behind Randy Winn and Edgar Renteria and Pablo Sandoval, you know, relatively unknown, but hitting behind those guys, I see him, you know, doing the same thing.
I feel like Benji Molina is going to live and die by the guys who hit in front of him. I think in Edgar Renteria, which is a sleeper for me at shortstop, we'll talk more about him later, he's a National League guy, and if that guy steps up and has a good year, there's going to be a lot more people to drive in, you know. And with him driving as many runs as he did last year, with a better lineup around him, I can see him driving a lot more. I'm torn between a Giovanni Soto and a Mike Napoli. I feel like both these guys are going to give you RBIs. Both these guys are going to give you home runs. Napoli's 27 years old. He's prime and ready to take that job over and be the full-time guy. I could see him being a 35 home run guy with, you know, 85, 90 RBIs. He hit 270 last year, which is pretty solid. And this is in limited time. He only had 227 at-bats. So given the opportunity to play full-time, which the Angels are saying he's going to get, he's going to have a decent lineup around him, going to be able to produce some pop. On the other hand, a Giovanni Soto with Milton Bradley hitting ahead of him, you know, Soriano hitting ahead of him. I mean, he's got a pretty potent lineup, and he doesn't have to be the guy.
That's very true. That's very true. You know, I normally wouldn't agree with you on the Giovanni Soto because he's a relatively new guy, but I like where he's going with that. Like you were saying, you know, with an added Milton Bradley over in Chicago, I think they can do some really good things over there.
My sleeper is going to be a Jesus Flores. He's kind of a super sleeper, but I think last year, in 300 at-bats, he had 8 home runs and he had 59 RBIs. This is a guy that you might be able to get late in the draft. You might be able to get him in the 12th, 13th, 14th round. And I think somebody like Jesus Flores getting an opportunity to play full-time might give you 16 to 20 home runs as well as 85 RBIs. This is pretty awesome production out of a late draft pick out of a catcher as well. I can't see him not having a pretty decent season this year.
All right. My sleeper, and you're probably going to say I'm crazy, but I'm going to go with Ramon Hernandez. He just got signed to the Cincinnati Reds. He's coming off a so-so year in Baltimore, but he is moving to a hitter's park. He's going to have a better lineup around him with Edwin Encarnacion, Brandon Phillips, Joey Votto, Jay Bruce, and I think with a true leadoff man leading the way and Willie Tavares, I think he's going to get a lot of opportunities to produce some runs.
I think Ramon Hernandez is a kind of a super sleeper, only because he is somebody who might get hurt, might get banged up. For me, he may be a concern, but I know he fits right into the mold that you like, the older guys, the proven guys, the veterans. I don't dislike him. Let's go ahead and move into first basemen. I'm going to give the duh pick of the year. Albert Pujols is my favorite guy. I know he kind of goes away from what I like in that he's not that young, but man, is he good.
Yeah, you stole my pick. You stole my pick. I mean, enough said, really. Albert Pujols. I don't think we really need to go
what
any further with
say,
that.
Right?
Another guy, you know, who really needs no introduction or any kind of backup, Mark Teixeira.
Yeah.
You know, going to New York, dangerous lineup over there, batting third.
How do you feel the steroids, the A-Rod steroid issue is going to affect him?
Well, you know, if at all, I think it'll actually help Mark Teixeira, you know? Like, there was a lot of scrutiny and a lot of hubbub about him, you know, where he was going to sign, how much money he was going to get, and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, he ended up in New York, and now with this Alex Rodriguez steroid thing, I think that's going to take a lot of pressure off of him, and he's not going to have to worry about performing as much, and he can just go out and play like he can.
You know, another guy who can just go out and play is a Kevin Euclid. I like him as my mid-round pick. He's got a dual capability where he can play first or third base. They don't call him the Greek god of walks for no reason. This gentleman is going to walk. He's not going to strike out a ton. He's going to have a high on-base percentage. I think last year hitting 29 home runs and having 115 RBIs is very telling. He's just a gamer, man. He goes out and he plays hard and he just bangs. And for me, there's nothing not to like about someone like that. You know, he's relatively unknown, so you can probably get him pretty late.
Well, I don't know if he's unknown after, you know, last season. But my mid-round choice is Carlos Peña on Tampa Bay Devil Rays. His batting average left something to desire last season, but he is coming off two straight 30-plus home run and 100-plus RBI seasons. He's got virtually the same lineup around him with the addition of Pat Burrell. And I think this guy's, you know, really serviceable in any kind of lineup, and he'll fly under the radar, you know? Like, you can probably get him late in the draft.
I think this is kind of a tribute to what we were talking about with scarcity. You look at these guys we're talking about, and, you know, you hear a name like a Carlos Peña, and you think getting him late. But the reality of the situation is there's a ton of great first basemen out there. So you folks out there preparing your draft, understand that you can get a first baseman late. You don't have to push. Giambi's going to be there. Peña might be there. You can look for a first baseman in the 5th to 6th round.
That's
so
true.
I as my sleeper, I'm kind of torn between a Chris Davis. He also plays first base and third base with the Texas Rangers. Last year, another guy with limited time, 17 home runs, 55 RBIs. The other guy I'm torn with is a Kendry Morales with the Anaheim Angels.
That's Los Angeles now, man.
You know, Los Angeles. As a Dodger fan, I can't bring myself to say the Los Angeles Angels of the world.
You know, I agree, but, you know, we just got to get it right here.
Yeah.
We don't want to get phone calls from the Angels saying, hey, we're in L.A.
Right. I feel like a Kendry Morales, he's tore up every level he's played at. Last year in AAA, he had .341. He had 15 home runs, 64 RBIs. This summer in the Dominican League, he hit .455, had 5 home runs in 12 games. The guy just hits. The only thing left for him to do is hit in the big leagues. So I really like him to be a very versatile and dangerous guy in that Angels lineup.
All right. Well, with my sleeper, again, kind of goes against my philosophy, but I'm looking at a Joey Votto of the Cincinnati Reds. He's 25 years old, and after winning the starting first baseman job from Scott Hatterberg last season, put up 151 games and had a great, great season. Had 24 home runs, 84 RBIs, and with him batting in front of Jay Bruce, I think he's going to get a lot of good pitches to hit. He's going to see a lot of fastballs, and I look for his numbers to rise.
I agree. I think something you got to keep in mind with the Joey Votto is he's a young guy who's going to play every day and hit against right-handers and left-hand pitching. You aren't going to have to worry about him platooning. I think those kind of things are things you got to keep in consideration with young guys. Me personally, being a young guy fan, I know that that's always a concern, where a lot of those young players only hit against right-handers or left-handers or don't play day games after night games or things like that. Joey Votto's a gamer, and he's going to play all the time, and I think that's a really good thing. Dan, why don't you take us into second baseman?
Second baseman, first choice. It's another one of those duh things for me anyway. I'm going to go with Dustin Pedroia of the Boston Red Sox.
Reigning MVP.
Reigning 2008 AL MVP. Also the 2007 AL Rookie of the Year. He drives in a lot of runs. He scores them as well. He's batting second in a deadly Boston lineup. I look for this kid to do great things this year.
Something that Pedroia also does for you is he'll go out there and he'll steal some bases. And I think something I really enjoy about watching Pedroia's game is he's going to give you dual points. Pedroia might go 0-for-4 with a walk, but you know what he might also do? He might steal you two bases. And, you know, for those of you who get rewarded for walks and stolen bases, you know, that's a three-point game out of a guy who doesn't have any hits.
Yeah, if you know, the guys behind him drive him in, that's a couple more points right there.
I agree. And one of my main guys is a Chase Utley. I feel like, you know, he's done everything, and he does everything.
He does, you know, and he was in contention for the NL MVP last year. But aren't you a little bit concerned about, you know, his health and how...
See, I think in this situation, his health might help you. Oftentimes, I would tell somebody to draft a Chase Utley in the first round, and I honestly believe he's probably a top 10 pick. In this situation, because a lot of people are going to shy away from him because of his injuries and because of the production that somebody like Pedroia had, I think you're going to be able to get him in the second, maybe third round. I think people might be scared of that. From what I understand, his surgeries have all gone well. His rehab's going well. He may miss the first month of the season. When you're playing in a league that goes 23 weeks, you know, 1 week's not going to be all that bad. There are going to be fillers late. You can use sleepers. You can use low-end guys.
Yeah, you just got to make sure you've got somebody who can fill that spot until a Chase Utley can come back with a vengeance.
I agree. Maybe somebody like my mid-round guy, Alexi Ramirez of the Chicago White Sox. He's going to play shortstop as well as second base, and this kid mashes. Cuban deport, he comes in the league, or Cuban import, I'm sorry, comes into the league prepared to hit. Last season in his rookie year, he had 21 home runs, 77 RBIs, and 13 stolen bases. Folks, he only had 480 at-bats. This is a kid that once he gets the opportunity to get a full season under his belt, he's only going to get better. I also really like a Jose Lopez. This guy quietly went about his business last year in Seattle and had 17 home runs, had 89 RBIs on a bad team.
Wow, on Seattle?
Unbelievable, right? I couldn't believe it myself.
Wow.
Somebody I like this year to maybe have a little bit more production or much of the same. But I'm telling you, if my second baseman has 17 home runs and 89 RBIs...
Yeah, you're stoked.
I'm smiling.
You are definitely smiling. My mid-round guy, we're looking at Kelly Johnson from the Atlanta Braves. He's really coming into his own after the last two seasons of going full-time and playing, you know, every day. He's had 85-plus runs averaged in the last 2 years. And there's rumors of him going to the outfield, so he'll give you multiple eligibility. You can put him in second base, you can put him in the outfield, you know, it gives you some options.
Yeah, I've heard rumors of him playing left field because Matt Diaz isn't going to maybe not get it done. And now that Ken Griffey Jr. signed, that takes away some options for the Braves. I like a Kelly Johnson. My concern with a Kelly Johnson is I know he's not happy about moving to the outfield, and I know that he's got a couple injury-prone guys behind him. I feel like Chipper Jones at some point is going to have to start showing his age.
He certainly didn't show it last year.
No, but even though he still got hurt last year, Jeff Francoeur was awful last year, folks. Terrible. So I think something that you have to worry about Kelly Johnson is he's not going to be your number three guy. He's not going to be your four guy in the lineup. He's going to be a two guy. And somebody who's hitting two, you really depend on the people behind you to really help him out. So for me...
I think he's actually leading off in Atlanta.
Yeah, there you go. So that even worries me a little bit more. My thought is I would rather go for my sleeper, Mike Alves.
Aviles.
Aviles, if you will.
You gotta roll your...
Royals, I gotta roll it. I don't speak Spanish, unfortunately. I think he's gonna be able to play second base and shortstop as well, so we'll have dual positions. If you guys haven't noticed, something I really like is the guys who can play multiple positions. I think it gives you a lot of options, which is nice when guys start getting banged up. Last season, I rode this guy into my championship game. He got hot at the end of the year. I mean, red hot. And he just kept hitting. He had 325, 10 home runs, and 51 RBIs. And he had 201 total bases and 419 at-bats. Guy was hot, man. I really appreciated it because I won some money, thankfully.
Yeah. Well, that gets us to my sleeper. I'm looking to Mark Ellis, you know, and coming off of a rough year with a struggling offense last year, I mean, their lead RBI guy last year was Jack Cuss. He only had hit in 77 RBIs, you know. And a lot of people will kind of look at me like I'm crazy, but, you know, you bring in a guy like Matt Holliday, who's hitting over 100 RBIs, and I expect his numbers to improve. You know, he's leading off. He's going to have Matt Holliday hitting directly behind him, so I think he's going to see a lot of fastballs and have a lot of opportunity to get on base, steal some bases, and score some runs.
This is a pick that I don't necessarily like. He fits Dan's mold. He doesn't fit mine. The guy's old. I think he's
only 31.
He's old though. There's a lot of miles on those tires, and I feel like though he's serviceable, I just don't see him being amazing. For you, those of you guys in keeper leagues, this isn't a guy that you're going to want to sign and move into the next season. Even if he does have a good year, you got lucky this year with him. I really don't look for him to stay hot. Someone I do expect to stay hot, though, is my top choice at third base. This guy fits every little bit of my mold. Last year, this guy carried my team, took me far into the playoffs. I ended up winning a championship with him. Evan Longoria, the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. Kid just smoked the ball. Guy had 27 home runs and 85 RBIs in 448 at-bats. This kid didn't even play a full season. The way I see it is this kid getting the opportunity to hit every day and play every day and really get into his own groove, he's just going to be a monster. MLB.com has this kid projected at 35 home runs and 107 RBIs. You know, I'm going to be honest with you, I think they're shortcutting him in the RBIs. I see him with closer to 120.
Well, if he rides the role that he got on last year, I'd have to agree with this, you know, and I also see a lot of big things coming out of Evan Longoria, but I also see a lot of big things coming out of my top choice at third base, and, you know, love him or hate him, I got to go with A-Rod, you know. Guy puts up numbers. I really
steroid
don't...
Steroid-induced
or not, he puts up the numbers, he's going to score you some points. You can ride this guy to a championship. He doesn't get hurt. Enough said.
A-Rod equals championship. I feel like steroids or not, luckily they don't test in fantasy baseball, so I really don't care. You can't go wrong with an A-Rod, folks. If you can get A-Rod in the first round, I can't disagree.
You got to take him.
Someone that I would wait until the later rounds to get it is my mid-round guy, Edwin Encarnacion. Last year with 26 home runs and 68 RBIs, he went out and just got it done. He doesn't get a lot of hits. He does strike out a decent amount. He plays zero defense. But thankfully, in fantasy baseball, we don't get points taken away for errors, right? I like him to really hit the ball well this year. I could see this guy maybe hitting 30 home runs. He's got a decent lineup around him. And he's got the opportunity to play every day. I like that out of a third baseman.
Yeah. My mid-round choice, I'm looking at Michael Young. You know, during this offseason, they asked him to move from shortstop to third base to make room for their rookie stud. And, you know, I don't really hate a Michael Young. You know, if you can get him in the middle rounds, he's still available. Take him. He plays a lot of games, gets a lot of at-bats, doesn't have much pop to his bat, but he scores a lot of runs, and he drives a lot of runs in, too. And I think he'll benefit from hitting in front of Josh Hamilton.
All right, now Dan and I had a long conversation last night about our thoughts with Michael Young. I personally believe that a Michael Young is pretty overrated.
Overrated. Look at his numbers. 102 runs scored with 82 RBIs.
You know, and those numbers aren't bad, but I think at a position at third base, or a position like third base, you want a power guy. You want a guy who's going to drive in runs. I don't necessarily hate on Michael Young. I think he's great when it comes to real-life baseball. He's a true leader. But when it comes to fantasy, I just think there's so many other choices that are going to give you a lot more pop. Somebody like maybe a Michael Lowell. He's my sleeper pick at third base. And, you know, he goes against everything that I would normally think or want in a third baseman. But I think somebody like him coming off of an injury like he is, he's 100% healthy, and people are scared to draft him, frankly. In the mock drafts that we've witnessed, he's averaging going in the 14th, 15th round. I think somebody that 2 years ago had 120 RBIs and hit 324, you can't overlook this guy. Last year in limited time, playing hurt, he had 17 home runs and 73 RBIs. I really like Mike Lowell to rebound. And the thing that I like the best about Mike Lowell is that he's going to go under the radar.
He is going to go under the radar, and, you know, normally he would be, you know, somebody that I would look at, but I just don't know if I want to take a risk with his injury. you know.
High risk, high reward.
That, yeah, you know, you like that. You like the high risk, high reward. I like the reliable guys. One of my sleepers, kind of goes against my mold, is a Ty Wigginton, signed with the Baltimore Orioles. And, you know, in just 386 bats last year, he had 23 home runs, 58 RBIs. Didn't really get to see much time playing, but when he did see some time playing, he really mashed the ball. In the month of August, he played 28 games, had a .395 batting average with 12 home runs and 26 RBIs.
Now, do you think that because he doesn't necessarily have a position with Baltimore, they're talking about him platooning in various spots, do you think that that's something that may hurt his fantasy statistics?
I don't know if this guy is somebody that you want starting every day, but this guy is definitely somebody amazing to have on your bench. You know, he's got outfield eligibility. They're talking about maybe platooning him in the middle infield. If that happens, you know, then I just see possibilities opening up all over the place. He can play middle infield, third base, outfield.
Maybe a Mark DeRosa type player.
Maybe a Mark DeRosa type player. Who's my other sleeper? You know, he's another really versatile guy. Plays second base, plays third base, plays outfield, and he's had over 70 RBIs in the last three seasons. He's hitting between Grady Sizemore and Travis Hafner. You know, I see some good things coming out of him over in Cleveland. And, you know, worst comes to worst, if you don't put him at third base, put him at second base.
Fair enough. Start
him there. Second base is kind of scarce, so.
Well, let's let that middle infield move us. Or speaking of middle infield, we'll move into shortstops. Dan and I both have duh picks for you that we'll breeze through a little bit since we're starting to run a little lower on time than we'd like. I love Hanley Ramirez. He's going to be hitting in the three spot this year with Florida. It's pretty much the same offense. I see him driving in a lot more runs than he did last year. Dan, who's your dub pick?
My dub pick is Jose Reyes of the New York Mets. You know, a lot of people will say that he's a little overrated and not as good as his numbers tell, but, you know, he's leading off a potent Mets lineup. He sees a lot of at-bats, gets on base a lot, steals a lot of those bases, and scores a lot. So I don't see, you know, for fantasy purposes, why he'd be overrated.
You know, I feel like a Jose Reyes is overrated. Everyone feels like after that first year where he had 20-something home runs that he was going to keep doing it. I don't think he will. But someone who I do think will hit 20 home runs again is my mid-round pick, Stephen Drew, the shortstop for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Last season he had 21 home runs, 67 RBIs. The thing that I really like about him, 152 games and 611 at-bats. He's going to have the opportunity to swing the bat, and I really like that because if he builds on last season and he continues with this path of growth, he might hit 25, 30 home runs. It's possible.
You know, I like a Stephen Drew, but personally, you know, my mid-round choice, my first Dodger that I've mentioned, is Rafael Furcal. You know, he did have very, very, very limited time last year, playing in only 36 games. But in the 26 games in April, before he went down with his injury, he hit .367, had scored 21 runs, and had 10 RBIs. If this guy stays healthy, I see him putting up, you know, a .300 batting average with 30 stolen bases and 100 runs scored.
Well, healthy is definitely a question mark for him, and I think it's also a question mark for my sleeper pick, Edgar Renteria. He consistently plays upwards in the 140 games when healthy. Last two seasons, he's played less than 140, and he's been a wee bit disappointing. But something you've got to keep in mind is he's an NL guy. The time he spent with the Tigers, the time he spent with the Red Sox, those numbers don't really indicate what he's capable of doing. In 2007 with the Atlanta Braves, he hit .332 with 12 home runs. He did that in only 494 at-bats.
That's
impressive. Don't let that age scare you with him. He's an NL guy, and I think he's going to have a really good time teeing off on some of that young pitching in the NL West.
Lots of young pitching in the NL West. My sleeper also, you know, had an injury last year, but I'm going to go with a Troy Tulowitzki. He had a so-so start before going out with a torn quad, but his second half numbers are really, really good. He had batted .327. In 62 games with 31 runs scored and 30 RBIs, you know, I think this is a sign of good things to come. I think he'll bounce back in a big way this year, and I see him returning to form.
Yeah, I can't necessarily disagree. I think this is a guy built in the Ripken mold. If he's healthy, he's going to play, and he's going to hit with some pop. They've got him charted to hit in a two-hole in a pretty decent lineup, and he's playing in Colorado, and folks, I don't know if you know this, but the ball carries.
Ball carries a little bit.
As far as I know, they aren't using the humidor anymore, so I wouldn't be surprised if he had 25, 30 home runs. Another guy who's got a lot of pop that I'm sure is going to mash is my first top choice in the outfield, Ryan Braun. Mr. Ryan Braun last season had 37 home runs and 106 RBIs. I think he's going to build on that. He's consistently gone up from his rookie year to his sophomore year. He's had more home runs, more RBIs. Folks, I think he's going to keep going. This guy's got endless talent, and he's going to be hitting in front of Prince Fielder this year, so he might see his share of fastballs. Dan, what about you?
You know, even though he is getting up there in age, he does very much fit my mold. He's very proven, very reliable. Manny Ramirez. He's not signed anywhere yet, but the guy mashes the ball. He's an offensive powerhouse, and no matter where he lands, he's going to make an impact. You know, in 53 games with LA this past season, he hit .396 with 17 home runs and 53 RBIs.
Yeah, that was nice. I really appreciated that from Manny.
Yeah.
And Manny, if you're listening, please come home.
Come back to the Dodgers.
Please. I'll come to more games if you come home. I promise.
I'll drive you to the stadium. I'll buy you a couple beers. I mean, you got money, but I'll do it. I'll buy you some beers.
We need you, man.
After the game, of course.
Someone else who had some magic last year, who's my mid-round pick, is B.J. Upton. He wasn't quite as magical as Manny Ramirez, but if you remember, he had that October where I believe he had 8 home runs. Last season, that October showed that he had a power stroke. And the dude's going to steal some bases. He had 44 stolen bases last year. I expect all those numbers to keep going and keep building. Another kid I really like as a mid-round sleeper for me is Andre Ethier. 27 years old. He's primed and ready. He's going into arbitration. He went into arbitration. They settled on a deal. I think he's angry, and I think he's got something to prove. Last year, he had 20 home runs and 77 RBIs while hitting .305. I'm seeing him build on that, folks. And MLB.com doesn't disagree with me. They have him slated at hitting 25 home runs with 105 RBIs. I think if we get that kind of season out of an Andre Ethier as a late-round guy, things are going to be really good for the Dodgers. We'll see what happens. Dan, how about you? What about your mid-round guys?
Well, I don't know if this guy kind of falls into the mid-round. He may be a top-to-mid-round kind of guy. But you were talking about that the Baltimore Orioles and how they're trying to put together a contender, or it seems they're trying to put together a contender. You know, I like a Nick Markakis. The guy's a .299 career hitter with an average of 87 RBIs and 15 to 20 home runs in the last three seasons. He scored over 100 runs in the last two seasons. I think he can do some good things over there. I think I can see more of the same coming out of him. More of a mid-range kind of guy, even though his numbers aren't telling of it. I like a Ryan Ludwig. He played the most he's ever had last year, stepped up big time, hit 37 home runs, 113 RBIs, and scored 104 runs. I don't think this is a fluke, and I think he'll be able to put up similar numbers this year.
Now, I have a concern with each of these guys. I feel like... First, let's start with Markakis. When you're looking into a keeper league, which I know many of you people out there are, I think you have to keep in mind the price tag on these kids. MLB.com's got Nick Markakis' price at $25. Andre Ethier, who's going to give you similar numbers, is at $17. And then when you look into a Ryan Ludwig's lower than both of those guys. So I think it comes down to the risk that you feel comfortable with as somebody drafting these ball players.
That's very true. You know, with Ryan Ludwig, he's 30 years old, so for keeper leagues, you may not want to sign him for too long.
Well, Ryan Ludwig's a little bit more expensive than Andre Ethier. Ryan Ludwig has $20.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. But still, I mean, he is a little bit older, so for keeper leagues, you may not want to sign him for too long. Markakis and Ether are both younger guys, so if you've got it, spend it.
You know, my thought is going into how I like to draft, my next two sleepers are cheaper than both those guys. You've got a Justin Upton and a Sin-So Cho. Justin Upton with the Diamondbacks last year had 15 home runs, one of which I believe was at 486 feet, setting the record for the longest home run hit by any Diamondback in Bank One Ballpark. Wow. He did so in 350 at-bats. This kid's a five-tool player. He didn't steal a lot of bases last year, but I wouldn't be surprised if he starts doing that sometime soon. When you look at a Shin-So Chu, he's 26 years old. He's with the Cleveland Indians. Last year, he had 14 home runs and 66 RBIs and hit .309. Some of you people out there might be scratching your head and saying, why would I want this? Folks, he only had 317 at-bats. And last year in September, he had over 400. He had over 8 home runs, or he had 8 home runs, and he had upwards of 20 RBIs. This kid mashed when he got the opportunity. I like him to do the same this year, and he's cheap. He's one of those guys that if you can get cheap and he ends up panning out, definitely sign him and keep him as a keeper for the following year, and you're looking at a pretty good price tag. Dan, who are your sleepers?
Topping off my sleepers, I've got a Jacoby Ellsbury. You know, last year he was a man without a position. He played in 145 games, but in a lot of those games he came in really late. He had to battle for position with Coco Crisp. You know, he still was able to score 98 runs and steal 50 bases. This year he's going to be a full-time player, and I think his numbers will reflect that leading off for the Red Sox. My next sleeper, going with your youth movement and possibly cheap guys, I'm looking at Matt Kemp from the Dodgers. I think his numbers are going to benefit with having a healthy Rafael Furcal at the top of the lineup. And I think he's got the potential for batting .300 with 20 home runs, 20 stolen bases, and I think he'll get there this year.
Does Matt Kemp's strikeouts alarm you at all? I know he did strike out at kind of a high rate last year. For me, as a fantasy owner, I think that would be something that would concern me in those leagues that deduct strikeouts.
His strikeouts are a little bit of a cause for concern, but I think as this guy goes a little bit longer and matures a little more, he'll be okay. And I think he makes up for it with his offense. You know, like, he'll get you, you know, 80 RBIs, bat .300, but he'll also steal some bases. He had 35 stolen bases last year, so I think that really balances out his strikeout.
Fair enough. I think we'd like to take this opportunity to jump into another portion of our show. We like to break up the monotony of the numbers with something we like to call a seventh inning stretch.
That's right. The seventh inning stretch is a little segment where we tell you what happened this week in baseball history. And, you know, as a Dodger fan, I'd like to pay homage to Mr. O'Malley, who on February 18th of 1960 completed the purchase of the land where Dodger Stadium now sits in the Chavez Ravine.
You know, if any of you fans out there have been to Chavez Ravine, it is absolutely breathtaking. We definitely, as Dodger fans, owe great thanks to what Mr. O'Malley did. Best backdrop in baseball, for sure. Where else can you see palm trees in the backdrop of the stadium? I think it's absolutely wonderful.
I think breathtaking was definitely the correct word. Also, this week in baseball history, on February 21st, 1989, Pete Rose met with the commissioner of baseball and the commissioner-elect of baseball to explain the allegations about his gambling habits, you know, and we all know what happened after that. The month following, he was banned from the game forever.
Can you believe that somebody that has the most hits in all of baseball isn't in the Hall of Fame?
It's a shame. It's a shame.
Unbelievable.
It's a shame, you know, but that was this week in baseball and the seventh inning stretch.
That's going to lead us right back into where we left off with pitchers. Folks, something I'd like to talk to you about pitchers here is my personal belief is I feel like there's so many talented arms out there that you can really take your time in drafting these guys. They aren't someone you have to draft high. This isn't a position that's scarce in talent. Every year there's a couple young guys that come out and just blow people away. Mm-hmm. There's the Zach Greinkes of the Kansas City Royals last year.
Edison Volquez.
Pitchers of that nature where you really can go get them. So I can't stress enough, if you see pitchers start coming off the board, don't panic. Continue with your draft method. I'm telling you, when people start panicking, they start taking Johan Santana in the second round. And something you have to realize is John Lester and Johan Santana had close to the same year last year, and I guarantee you John Lester went much later. So let's go ahead and take this opportunity to jump into the type of pitchers that we like and who we think are going to really help you out this year.
All right, well, I, you know, my top choice for starting pitching is kind of the obvious, but I have to go with Cliff Lee from the Cleveland Indians. He had monster numbers last year. He's the 2008 AL Comeback Player of the Year, AL Cy Young Award winner. I'm sure that his numbers are going to come back to earth a little bit, but I don't expect them to drop off too much.
Does it kind of scare you and make you wonder if it's a fluke that he went from 2 years of ERAs well over four and 1 year of an ERA over six, and then he dropped off to 2.54? I mean, my thought with the Cliff Lee is I for as good as he is, and I can't believe I'm going to say this about a guy who won so many games last year, I still wonder if maybe he's a risk.
You know, I could see where that would be a cause for concern, but I think you know, last year really helped his confidence out. You know, he like I said, he was the comeback player of the year. He won 22 games. He's the ace of the Cleveland Indians, and I think with that confidence, he's going to be able to stay on top. And like I said, his numbers may drop off a little bit. He may not win 22 games for you, but I think he'll still put up a decent number of wins.
See, I think somewhere like that, you might have to draft pretty high. I feel like maybe a Tim Lincecum and something like a Cole Hamels, my top choices, are guys that you might be able to get a little bit later. Lincecum's pretty obvious. Dude's a stud, NL Cy Young Award winner, kid's a freak. Thus, his nickname, the Freak.
The genetic freak.
He, at 5'9", somehow the kid throws fastballs in the mid to high 90s.
Weird windup he's got, man.
You know, weird or not, it works. Last year he struck out 265 batters and only walked 84. Someone else, in referencing those young guys, Cole Hamels, last year, 196 Ks with 53 walks. He threw 227 innings, and that's no reflection of how well he pitched in the playoffs. I think he figured some things out, and I know traditionally guys that go through the playoffs and dominate like they did usually carry it into the following season. I like Cole Hamels to have a huge year, folks. I think this is a guy that can really carry a pitching staff.
I fully agree with you on that one with Cole Hamels. My next top choice, I think, is another kind of dud guy. Brandon Webb of the Arizona Diamondbacks, staff ace over there. He was second in the Cy Young Award voting to Tim Lincecum. I see him having, you know, a 15-plus win season with 175 strikeouts. You know, he's averaged it the last 4 years, and I think he's going to continue with that trend.
You know, I can't disagree with you there. I Brandon Webb's always good, unfortunately. He drives me crazy. Someone who isn't always good, but who I think is going to be really solid, is Ricky Nolasco of the Florida Marlins. The guy's good, man. Last year he had 212 innings. He had 186 strikeouts. He won 15 games. And a lot of people still don't know that name. He's another guy I think you can steal in the draft because people don't understand how good he really is. He's on an improved Florida team. They just keep getting younger and somehow better. I really like this guy to have a like season that he had last year.
All right. Well, you know, my mid-round choice is a John Lester. You mentioned him earlier in reference to a Johan Santana having similar numbers, and, you know, I really can't argue with that. He had 16 wins with only 6 losses and a 3.21 ERA. Kid figured some stuff out, and I really think in the playoffs he showed that he can be dominant and he can step up and, you know, get people out.
I definitely agree. I think he's another guy that kind of can go in with that same kind of fit as Cole Hamels. I think he's a guy that's just, you know, him beating cancer was amazing by itself. Then to have a no-hitter last season, and then to have the playoffs he had. Folks, I don't know if you saw this guy pitch against the Angels. He was amazing. If he can carry a little bit of that in next season with that offense, he may win 20 games.
I don't disagree. There are a lot of players that we're not mentioning, you know, a lot of pitchers, but like Noah said, names are going to creep up. You know, the people are going to come out of the woodworks and surprise you, and I think my sleeper choice is going to be one of those guys. I'm looking at a Jeremy Guthrie from the Baltimore Orioles. You know, his win-loss record isn't anything dazzling. He won 10 games and lost 12 games, but he had a 3.63 ERA on the Baltimore Orioles last season, you know, and I think this kid's problem is just, you know, a lack of run support. In those 12 losses, the Orioles only scored 21 runs total.
That's scary.
It's scary. 12 losses, only 21 runs. And you figure this guy also started 30 games, so that's a third of his games are in no decisions. You know, that's not fair. And I think that if, you know, Baltimore can figure some things out offensively, I think his wins are going to rise and his losses are going to drop a little bit.
You know, I can't disagree with you there. I got a player that kind of fits that same mold, if you will. Clayton Kershaw, kid's just a baby. Last year, he won 5 games in 22 starts, and he did it with 2 pitches. Folks, he barely threw a changeup. This year, he's going to be using all 3 pitches. He's going to be a full-time starter, and they aren't going to have the inning cap on him. Last year, he had a cap in which they wouldn't let him go over 100 pitches, period. That's it. And oftentimes, they pulled him before that. He had tons of no decisions. My only concern with this guy is that he is going to walk a lot of guys. He's going to strike a ton out, but he does walk a lot of guys. He goes deep in counts, and he does flirt with disaster sometimes. But you know, he's that high-risk, high-reward kind of player.
If he figures some things out, I see some big things coming out of Clayton Kershaw.
The last guy I want to talk about, I don't know where he necessarily fits. I don't know if you can call a guy that's won 19 games in back-to-back seasons a sleeper. But a Chin-Ming Wang with the Yankees, I feel like they're going to live and die with the offense. But Chin-Ming Wang's going to really be the difference maker. I know they have Sabathia. I know they have Burnett. But I feel like both of those guys are kind of add-ons. Chin-Ming Wang's a guy who's been there. Last season in 15 starts, he had 8 wins. Didn't pitch much. He didn't even break the 100 inning mark. He's back. He's healthy. He's a sinker baller. He gets people out. He doesn't walk people. Don't be surprised if he wins 19 games again.
With an offense like that behind you, I can't disagree with you. But I think a good indicator as to whether or not you're going to have starting pitchers winning is, you know, good closers.
I agree.
For me personally, I don't think it gets any better than Jonathan Papelbon of the Boston Red Sox. You see him come out of the bullpen, and it's just lights out.
You know, it was lights out until September. He had an ERA over 5 in September, folks. This guy is, you know, he's fixed the meltdown.
You know, I can't argue with it. The numbers don't lie. He did have a 5.56 ERA in September, but I don't think that's a cause for concern in fantasy leagues. Most leagues are done by the time he melted down, you know, so I don't think it's going to be a problem. This guy will definitely get the job done for you.
You know, something that Dan brings up is that our seasons don't always go as long as the regular baseball season. Another thing I think you got to keep in mind is do not pay for saves. Folks, do not draft these closers high. I know Brad Lidge didn't blow a save last year. I know he was in Cy Young contention. That doesn't mean that you need to pay for him. Something you have to understand is with there being 30 teams in the league, all 30 teams are going to have somebody closing for them. There's always going to be closers out there. If you're in a 12-team league, you know, there's more closers to go around than anyone knows what to do with. I don't think you have to jump on a Papelbon or my top choice, a Brad Lidge early. I feel like these guys are going to be good. They're going to be lights out. But you know what? It's not going to make a difference. Someone who I also believe is going to be lights out is my mid-range, or my mid-round guy, I guess late-round guy with that little speech I just gave, but Kerry Wood, 34 saves last year, he had 66 appearances, he struck out 84 batters. Folks, he's on a really good team, that Cleveland Indian team. I wouldn't be surprised to see him build on that 34 save season.
You know, I can't disagree with his numbers, but aren't you a little concerned about his proneness to injury?
You know, that's where that high risk, high reward comes in. I think especially with closers that save games, I think you can take that risk. Because like I said, there's always someone to fall back on.
That's true. With me, I like a Joe Kim Soria. He's a really young guy, but he had the second most amount of saves in the American League last year, second only to Frankie Rodriguez. And that was on the Royals. They're not a very good team. You know, they didn't win very many games, but when they did win games, they were really close games. Those 3-2 games, the 2-1 games, and that's when a Joakim Soria comes in and gets you 42 saves.
I think with a Joakim Soria, something you got to understand this season as well is it is an improved Kansas City Royal team. I can't believe I'm saying this. I know people are going to think I'm crazy, but the Kansas City Royals have got some young, talented ball players, and they've got a really deep minor league system. They're better than they were last year. Trust me on this. I really feel like Soria might build on his saves. I also wouldn't be surprised if, you know, they show Tampa Bay, you know, that they're not the only teams in town that can surprise some people. I don't necessarily think they're going to win that division, but I think they're going to do better than other people think. Another guy that might surprise some people is Carlos Marmol of the Chicago Cubs. He's 26 years old, and he's my sleeper. Bear in mind that this guy, in three seasons, he's already got 233 innings. In those 233 innings, folks, 269 strikeouts. He hasn't been necessarily named the closer to be in Chicago camp. You know, they're gonna pair him with Kevin Gregg and see what happens. I wouldn't be surprised if he lands it. The guy is nasty, filthy. We're talking a two-seam fastball that breaks bats and a slider that is absolutely unhittable. I love this guy to have a great year. You know, if he has a season he had last year with a 2.68 ERA, he's going to save a lot of games.
I agree, you know, and if they do give him the job, which, you know, everyone's projecting, I definitely have to agree with you. I've got two sleepers. One of them is kind of a super sleeper. First on my list for a sleeper is Matt Lindstrom of the Florida Marlins. You know, he didn't get very many opportunities last year because they did have Kevin Gregg. He only got six save opportunities, but he converted five of them. With Kevin Gregg gone, it looks like this kid's going to be the one to step up and take that closer spot. He throws hard, and I expect him to step up and really take control of his job.
I can't disagree with that one.
My super sleeper, and you know, people everywhere are going to call me crazy. I'm looking at Matt Capps of the Pittsburgh Pirates.
You're crazy.
Yeah, I know. Don't look at me like that. I know I'm a little crazy, but I'm looking at his numbers. He spent 2 months on the DL, but he was definitely on pace for a 30-save season, and that's on the Pirates. He's not much for strikeouts, but he minimizes his walks. He only issued five last year in 53 and two-thirds innings. You know, I think that's phenomenal, and I think if he stays healthy, he will hit that 30-save mark, and I think he's a guy that you can get really, really late, if not after the draft.
All right, here's something that really scares me about Matt Capps, and this is another guy Dan and I butt heads on. Pittsburgh Pirates might win 60 games this year. I'd be surprised if they win 60 games, folks. If they win 60 games, he better save half of those games to have those 30 saves. I just don't see him having the opportunities. Another thing I don't see him staying healthy. He's a guy who traditionally comes to camp out of shape and not prepared to pitch, and someone who just gets by with control. Traditionally, guys that get by with control as closers don't consistently do well. I don't know if anybody remembers with the Oakland A's. Oh, Keith Falk.
He was also a Red Sox.
He was a Red Sox as well. All he threw was a changeup, pretty much. He was in the Trevor Hoffman mold, except he just didn't throw the ball harder than 85. Had one or two good years, and people figured him out. I think Matt Capps is a guy that people are going to figure out.
Agree to disagree. The guy did have 21 saves last year on a bad team. But as long as we're talking about closers, let's go ahead and move into the final segment of the show. It's a little portion we like to call the closer. And it's just a segment of the show where we wanted to give the fans some food for thought, some things to think about. Feel free to send your comments, your emails into us at thewalkoff@hotmail.com. And today's issue is Alex Rodriguez. You know, is this new revelation going to affect his chances of getting into the Hall of Fame?
You know, I certainly hope not. I think Alex Rodriguez is a great ball player. He's done a lot of really good things. Presumably, he's gotten through a lot of his career not on steroids. You know, and even if he did do steroids his whole career, you know, you got to look at things from a standpoint of how bad is it really? Everyone else is doing it.
Well,
you know?
Everyone else. I mean, how do you compare a guy like A-Rod to, you know, baseball players of yesteryear, like your Hank Aarons, your Don Suttons?
Well, I think that kind of comparison isn't fair. When you look at Hank Aaron had to deal with a lot. One, he was going out there and breaking Babe Ruth's record, the Great Bambino. He was a black man during the Civil Rights Movement trying to break a beloved white man's record. I think that's one issue that A-Rod's never dealt with. Two, he dealt with bigger ballparks. Three, less aerodynamic bats, because with technology, the bats get better. And lastly, he was hitting a softer baseball. in the 90s, baseball juiced the ball. The league juiced the ball and made the ball much harder, thus making the ball travel further. So these baseball players nowadays are in smaller ballparks with watered-down pitching, because bear in mind, there's 30 teams in the league rather than back then when there was 22. And they've got juiced baseballs. You can't compare the two. It's just not fair.
All right. I mean, with everything that you just said, basically what I heard is yesterday's game is not the same as today's game. So with that being said, my question to you is, do you think A-Rod cheated?
You know, I think A-Rod did cheat, and I think he cheated with a bunch of other guys. I think Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, Rafi Palmeiro, all these guys cheated. But if they got into the Hall of Fame, they wouldn't be the only cheaters there. You know, three big names that come to mind when it comes to cheating in the Hall of Fame is Whitey Ford, Don Sutton, and Gaylord Perry.
What did these guys do that was so bad? I mean, we're looking at the steroid era, you know? Like, they're talking about putting asterisks on all of these guys' numbers. What do these three guys have to do with it?
Well, first and foremost, let's look at what they did well. Two of these guys, Don Sutton and Gaylord Perry, won over 300 games. All of these guys had a sub 2.3 or 3.3 ERA over their careers. They've all won tons of accolades. You know what they've all also done? They've used things to doctor the ball. Gaylord Perry was famous for his spitball, as well as utilizing Vaseline, and he was very open about it. So open, in fact, that when he retired, he wrote his autobiography and named it Me and the Spitter. And then shortly after that, went to the Vaseline company and asked if he could be their corporate pitch man.
Wow, and he is in the Hall of Fame. You know, there's no denying those numbers, however they may be doctored.
If you will. When you look at somebody like Whitey Ford, Whitey Ford used to use his wedding ring to cut the ball, and he'd also muddy up the ball. So you're talking about a ball that had a cut in it, so he was able to throw sharper breaking balls because he got a better grip. And then on top of that, he was using mud to weigh the ball down so it didn't carry as far. So you know, when you really put it into perspective, he was using the elements against people, and these are clearly against the rules.
You know, but I think that's just using, you know, the elements around you to get an advantage, you know? Like, the ball's going to get scuffed, you know, in play. Like, it's going to get some mud caked on there if there's a little bit of rain going. Like, what's the big deal?
But players nowadays don't get that. When you watch a baseball game, how many times do you see him change out the ball? Every foul ball. Every time the ball hits the dirt, the ball's changed.
Yeah.
The league has done everything it can to avoid this. Guys like Don Sutton, who used to keep sandpaper in their gloves so often that umpires used to search him before games to make sure that he didn't have any on him. He used to leave little notes behind, letting the umpires know if they were hot or cold and finding the sandpaper.
Wow. Talk about a slap in the face.
Right? These are guys that didn't try to hide what they were doing. So bringing this back all to A-Rod. Maybe A-Rod hid it for a long time. Maybe McGwire did. Maybe all these guys did. But ultimately, I personally believe that if they get into the Hall of Fame, they're going to be among cheaters. You know, I'd hate to say that all of the Hall of Fame is tarnished, but the reality behind it is some of it is.
You know, though, like we touched on earlier in this segment, baseball is a game that's changing all the time. If it's not steroids in 10 years, it's going to be something else. They're going to find ways to enhance their performance, you know, so I just don't think that there's anything that they can do to stay on top of this issue.
I don't necessarily disagree with you, but I think that some responsibility needs to be taken and things need to change. There is a drug policy in baseball.
Too little, too late, I think.
I agree, but I want to hear what you folks have to say out there.
We both would. I think this is a very touchy subject, and I think people are torn in both directions on it.
So I ask you fans out there, hopefully, you know, all one or two of you can respond. I ask you two questions. One, are the current players in the steroid era worse off or better than the cheaters of the past? And secondly, does A-Rod get in? Quite simply. So feel free to email us with any comments, questions, concerns at thewalkoff@hotmail.com.
You can also reach us at www.myspace.com/the_walkoff. And my name's Dan.
My name's Noah.
And you've just experienced the walk-off.